Good morning. You're listening to Central Wisconsin's 24-hour information station, WFHR. It's time now for the Morning Magazine.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine for this January 20th, 2023. It is 10:05 on the clock, and your host, James J. Maloff, here. At 10:30, we're going to welcome in Mike Hittner, an Historic Point boss, talk about their ice-cutting event coming up in January, late in January. Right now, joining us on the phone, State Senator, Wisconsin State Senator, that is, Senator Patrick Teston, joining us. Good morning, sir.
Hey, James. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. How you been?
I've been real busy now.
Yeah, you have.
Session kicked off on January 3rd. The legislature is wasting no time getting back to work, and so it's going to be a busy session. We are just on the floor on Tuesday to pass a constitutional amendment on bail reform, which will now go to the voters on April election. And now with my appointment to the Joint Finance Committee, I'll be have a seat at the table as we work on the next state budget. So it's going to be an exciting session. I'm looking forward to it.
And I'm looking forward to getting into that, talking about the repeal, the personal property tax, a number of things that you've had some newsletters and been in the news with lately. I wanted to start off, though, with, sir, you know, just that you mentioned the beginning of a new year, the beginning of a new some new jobs for some of you guys and you know, your colleagues out there. So when it comes to that, what are some of the things that you are looking to do in this session that you guys, like for you and your colleagues, what are some of the bigger things for you that you're looking for in this legislation that you would like to be able to accomplish?
Yeah, so already we've begun sitting down and taking a look at some of the bills that we had worked on last session that unfortunately didn't get across the finish line for one reason or another. And so a big one for me is to continue to push and advance the Advanced Practice Nurses Bill, which would simply allow for our APRNs, who are nurses who are highly educated, have advanced degrees, to operate at the highest level of their license. This was a bill that we got to the governor's desk last session that unfortunately was vetoed. However, we're starting fresh this legislative session and engaging more colleagues and different stakeholders. In fact, I had a conversation with one of my Democratic colleagues as I was leaving Madison just a couple days ago, and she came up to me and we had a good chat and basically said, hey, I'm on board. Let me know how I can help. And so we're trying to build more of a consensus on that front. Other areas, this session, I'm going to chair the Labor, Regulatory Reform, Military Affairs, and Veterans Affairs Committee. And so, you know, we've heard there are a number of issues at some of our veteran homes over in King, as well as Union Grove, that we're going to be doing our due diligence to ensure that we're taking the best care of our veterans and trying to find ways to make improvements there. And then, as you alluded to already, again, trying to eliminate the personal property tax to help our small businesses and our business community that have really been struggling in the wake of the pandemic and dealing with all sorts of different issues. So there's a whole host of different fronts that we're going to be addressing this session, and I'm glad to be back. And we've got a lot of new colleagues, over 20 in the Assembly, and 7 new faces in the State Senate. So there's been a lot of turnover, but that provides us a lot of opportunity to approach new ideas and different perspectives and continue to put our best foot forward here for the state.
Really hit the ground running, you and your colleagues. And with that, I think that speaks to the importance of modern politics and going forward. You look at both sides of the aisle going into an election, and you're going to see this is a big topic, this is a big topic, those things. But one of the most consistent things that I hear from people, not in surveys, but I hear from people is, well, what are they getting done? What are they doing? What are they accomplishing? Especially people like yourself and others throughout the state and really throughout the country that have been in these positions for a long time, and you start looking at their ballotopia or something like that, if you will, the back of their baseball card, and looking at their stats and seeing, well, what have they done? What did they accomplish? And with that, it seems like it used to be, I would ask you and others, well, how hard are you working, or how hopeful are you about working with colleagues across the aisle in that? Now it seems like you have to make this work. You've got to figure out a way to work with each other, especially in a state like Wisconsin, because for one, you might not get anything done otherwise, and you may not be elected into your next office if you're not getting things done.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And, you know, the approach I'm taking this session is the same approach I've taken in previous sessions, where, you know, I'm not afraid to reach across the aisle and work with my Democratic colleagues. And, you know, and build those relationships. And what I'm really encouraged as we start this new session is that there has been a dialogue that's been established by Republican leadership in the legislature along with the governor. In fact, for the first time in over 2 years, which is almost hard to believe, but legislative leadership had to sit down face-to-face conversation with the governor before the session kicked off, which I think is a good sign. Obviously there's still there's going to be a lot of back and forth, especially once the governor delivers his budget address to the legislature come early February, and then we begin the process of crafting the state budget that hopefully can build consensus to get out of both houses and to the governor, and one that he'll sign. Thankfully in the last two sessions and Governor Evers' first term, we sent him pretty aggressive budgets that had significant tax cuts. It didn't have everything the governor wanted, but at the end of the day, he signed those budgets that we sent him because I think, he could kind of see the writing on the wall that, it may not be everything that I wanted, but it's a step in the right direction, and there are some things that he could go around the state and champion as well. So, obviously we're early in the session, but I'm optimistic that we'll be able to do our job and get a budget done and hopefully signed into law, and one that will make critical investments in our state, whether it's dealing with K-12 education, making sure that our local towns are getting the support that they need for transportation and help fix their roads, and that we're having serious conversations on what it's going to take and be needed to make changes to shared revenue, because we hear from every unit of government who are struggling right now because of inflationary costs.
Let's go ahead and get into some of these. First up, we want to talk about the repeal of the personal property tax. First, tell us what this repeal, what you and your colleagues are trying to get forward here, and then we'll kind of get into it a little bit more.
Yeah, so the personal property tax, this is not what most people may think of when you hear that property tax. You think, oh, my property tax bill that I get at the end of every year that, portions go towards county, technical colleges, your local school district. The personal property tax is related more towards businesses. And so, for example, the examples I always use is if you're a bar, a tavern owner, or a restaurant owner, and, when you go out and buy certain things for your establishment, whether it's a new table or chairs, when you go out and purchase those items, you already pay a sales tax. But with the personal property tax, what this does, it's a tax that you have to pay on these very same items year after year after year forever until those items are no longer in your possession or your business is gone. It's probably one of the most regressive taxes that we have had on the books for decades. And many other states, especially here in the Midwest, in Minnesota, Michigan, Illinois, in recent years have done away with their personal property tax because they realize how regressive it is and how burdensome it is. So last session within the state budget, we put in the full repeal of the personal property tax, which accounts to about a $200 million tax cut over the course of the two-year budget. Unfortunately, what happened was the provision got line item vetoed by Governor Evers. Now, after that veto occurred, legislation was introduced by Democrats within the legislature, but at that point, we had basically told the governor that you had your chance to get this done in the budget, so no go. So now we're hopeful that we're going to reintroduce this again, and we're hopeful that once it gets incorporated into the state budget, this will get signed into law because that money has already been allocated and is sitting there from the work that was done in the last budget. So it just should be an easy layup for us to get this done.
What are you hearing from the governor's office of why it was vetoed?
Well, the governor in his veto message from the budget, they cited some concerns with some language dealing with railroads, which from my understanding that language has been removed this time around. So, I don't really see any hurdles as to why this would get vetoed if and when it does make it to his desk again. And more importantly, this is really about providing relief for many of the same small businesses that struggled during the pandemic, who already have razor thin margins, who have been dealing with the labor shortages for the better part of 6 years now, and has only increased in recent years. And so we see this as a way to help boost Wisconsin's economic engine, and to provide that relief for our business community to reinvest those savings back into their business to help expand and grow and hire more workers. And again, just making Wisconsin a more competitive place as it relates to our tax climate.
And it's interesting with this whole thing, because going back and looking at some of the things that Governor Evers was looking to do, it uses very similar terminology that you're using to have the bill. It feels like you guys are on a similar page here, and there is a middle ground that can be reached.
Yeah, I would hope so. And in fact, you know, the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association just had their lobby day this week, and I met with some constituents who came down, and this is for the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association, one of their top legislative priorities. And I just kind of chuckled because I said, look, I'm going to be on WFHR on Friday. I'm sure we're going to be talking about this and doing what we can to educate people and encourage them to reach out to their representatives, and even reach out to the governor's office, encourage him that if and when this does make his desk, that it gets signed into law.
I want to talk now about bail reform and helping fight violent crime. You and I have talked about this before, and I think in previous conversations that the direction has been a little bit different. This bill in particular is a much different one in place. So I think, first up, go ahead and tell the audience, for those that may not know, what this bill is.
So this is a constitutional amendment, and so this has been worked on for several years by a couple of my colleagues, Senator Van Longard and Representative Cindy Duco. They've been at this for the better part of 6-7 years now. And so the way we amend our state constitution here in the state is that you have to pass a joint resolution out of both houses in two consecutive legislative sessions. And then from there, it goes to referendum, statewide referendum, and in this case, it will be on the ballot this April. Now, back in the early 80s, there were changes made to our bail system that, from many people I've talked to within our judicial system, have said really hinders their ability when it relates to providing bail for individuals. So essentially, they could only look at whether or not any bail that was put forward would cause any hindrances for them to show up in court, and didn't allow them to take a full look and range at a person's flight risk, if they are a danger to themselves or others, and any potential to commit more egregious acts. So for instance, in the case of Daryl Brooks, who was the individual convicted of the Waukesha Christmas parade tragedy, you know, he was out on $1,000 cash bond a week before he committed his heinous crimes. And even though this individual had a rap sheet a mile long and should never have been out on the streets to reoffend, unfortunately, with the current system set up the way it is, was able to be out on relatively low cash bail. And so we believe this is going to be, if approved by the voters this April, will provide a necessary tool for our judges around the state that if there is a dangerous individual who poses a threat to themselves and has the opportunity to commit a violent and terrible crime, that they don't have that opportunity to hurt and harm others.
I don't think anybody is in favor of violent criminals being free. So I think that is, you know, clear point. One of the interesting, there's a couple interesting notes of this to me. For one, the national stats from prisonpolicy.org along with vera.org, less than 10% of people waiting trial commit crimes. Less than that, even violent crimes. With this a horrible situation that happened with Brooks and the Waukesha situation, it's terrible. And it's on all of our minds like it happened yesterday. Another thing that pops in my mind, though, is when every time there is a school shooting and you have a part of the aisle that says, well, this is not the time to talk about gun safety. And the other part of the aisle say, well, this is the perfect time to talk about this, even if it is a one in a million time thing. Here we have a situation where this has obviously not happened before and hopefully will not happen again. To kind of balance a bill on certain, like on something that is not an everyday occurrence, is kind of a concern. Now, that to me is here or there, and I don't think that's the part I want to really focus on, because the part I want to get to, sir, is the power giving to judges and who watches the watchman. I don't think that it's a bad idea to have judges have more of a say in a person's bail or if they should be free or not. They're in that position for a reason. but who holds them accountable? Who is going to make sure that they are not doing treating ethnic and poor people worse than others? Because that is the big concern here. If I've got a lot of money, well, then it doesn't matter. I can get out of this, or I can get one way or another through this situation. If I'm a person who is coming from a poor neighborhood, who is of an ethnic ability, we know the statistics. We know how this goes. So who holds the watchman? Who is going to hold people accountable?
Yeah, that's a good point. But let me just back up real quick, because some of the national stats that you cited, those are accurate figures without a question. However, Wisconsin's a bit of an outlier as it relates to how we handle bail, because
it's a good point.
We're the only state in the nation that does not allow a judge to take a look at an entirety of an individual's past history and record. And so, for instance, in the city of Milwaukee alone, 1 in 5, 20% of individuals who are suspected of committed a homicide or attempted homicide were out on low cash bail. And so that's why we think it's so necessary here in the state, because Wisconsin historically for the past 40 years has been an outlier in that regard. And so our trends don't line up with those of the national trends. Now, to your bigger point of who watches the watchmen, you know, that is one of the biggest complaints that I have with our judicial system as it stands right now, because judges are elected figures just like myself, Representative Krug, and anyone else who serves in elected office. We are accountable to the voters we represent. And so in the legislative position, any individual can take a look at any vote I've taken and hold me account to it, whether you agree with it or not, and then have the ability to voice your opinion every 4 years when my term is up for re-election. And so one of the things that we worked on, and this was late last session, this came as a recommendation from some folks that I talked to, is we need more transparency within our criminal justice system. And that goes not just for judges, but it goes for DAs, it goes for prosecutors. And so last session, we introduced a bill that would essentially provide more sunlight in, you know, how judges and district attorneys and prosecutors conduct themselves. So, for instance, on Wisconsin CCAP, where you can go up and take a look at someone's criminal record and even civil records within the court system, and you can see what they may have been charged with and what they had to pay out to the court and follow that. But what you don't get to see is all the charges that were brought forward, what got dropped, what got pleaded down. And I think that would be a useful tool for voters to know that, if, for instance, one, if there's a judge who may be soft on criminals, that, and if voters don't like that, well, then they have the ability to hold that person accountable. And on the flip side of that, if you have a judge who's imposing harsh penalties that people feel go above and beyond what is called for, well, then they have that ability, again, to make their voices known and find the judge that best represents the values within that community.
One of the other things about this that stands out, too, is, you know, I've had so many conversations over the years with our Sheriff Sean Becker, and one of the bigger things that he has tried to put forward is stopping the revolving door of crime, which is similar to the topic we're having here. And the biggest thing out of his mouth and others that I talk to is mental health. Is that another part of how we're trying to fight crime, is also focusing on mental health? Bail bonds, these things are great, but it can't be it's just a Band-Aid. This, if we're going to really do something about crime, we've also got to ask the criminals why they're committing these crimes, and figuring out that part too. Not to say that that's every criminal. You've always had knuckleheads in society, people who just want to watch the world burn. But I'm talking about the people who are doing it to feed their family or these things, and finding out, hey, is there a mental health issue? Are there bills? Are there things that you and your colleagues are talking about working on to approach it that way as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in fact, I just had a conversation with Sheriff Becker last night at an event we were both at together. And so, I mean, this is just the bail reform is just one piece of a puzzle, a very large puzzle, in fact. Mm-hmm. So, you know, over the last several sessions, we've had a number of bills and proposals come forward dealing with mental health and providing more access and care and trying to help people get back on their feet. You take a look at all the work that's been done through the HOPE agenda, helping individuals combat the opioid epidemic and the methamphetamine epidemic that we have here in the state. And I suspect there's going to be more work that needs to be done, providing more resources for treatment and diversion programs and doing what we can to help counties and municipalities establish drug courts, which, you know, I've seen firsthand, you know, having the ability to witness the proceedings of drug courts in a number of different counties in the 24th Senate District. And it truly is remarkable that when you provide a pathway for individuals and set up some guardrails in the event that they kind of bump up against them, that rather than just throw them away and say, you know what, there's no hope for you, really provide that structure and that pathway for these individuals to get back on their feet, become productive members of society again, and help cut down on the recidivism rate. And so I suspect we're going to be having lots of conversations and lots of legislation introduced on those fronts, just like we have every session that I've been in office.
And last week we had one of your colleagues, Representative Shankland, and we had got the chance to touch on this. So I wanted to wrap up and bring it up with you, because you and Katrina presented a citation to H.O. Wolding, the oldest man in Wisconsin. He and his family have done a lot for Portage County throughout the years. He is 110 years young. What was that like?
It was great. So Representative Shanklin and I, we got to go out just outside of Amherst and deliver a citation to Herb Wolding, who 110 years old. I'll be happy if I make it to 70.
Yeah, I hear you. Yes, yes.
And it was great, because he had two of his sons and their family members there, and it was really great to sit down and chat with him. Now, he's a little hard of hearing, and at 110, you can't blame him. But it was really a neat experience, because this is a guy who really was self-made. I mean, he started off doing different businesses. I think at one point he would deliver dairy to some of the different dairies around the area, hauled cranberries. And then I believe it was back in the 30s or 40s, he established H.O. Wolding Trucking, which is now a fourth generation owned business and very successful. They're nationwide. And a guy who is just very deeply involved within his community, has a strong faith. In fact, one of the persons I noticed when I walked in is sitting right next to his chair was a very worn down Bible. I guess I asked one of his sons, he reads it every day, and he keeps moving along. And mm-hmm. So I hope we'll have the opportunity to present him another citation for his 111th birthday next year.
Yeah, here's hope, and I'm looking forward to hearing about that when it happens. Senator, always appreciate the time. Thanks a lot. You have a great weekend, and we'll talk again next month.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, James.
Thank you. Big thank you to Senator Patrick Teston for joining us. Always appreciate the conversations with him. Coming up, part two, Historic Point Boss. We're going to talk to Mike Hittner and our friends over there. Coming up here on Morning Magazine at WFHR, locally grown radio.